Hello, everybody. This is Adam Reuter for the Baltimore County Informer podcast. On today's episode is joining me Baltimore County Executive Candidate Kim Stansberry. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam.
So first of all, I'd like you to tell the audience your background and how it qualifies you to be county executive.
I have a bachelor's degree from Towson University in political science. I have worked in the community for over 30 years as community activist, community advocate. I have worked for my community association in various different roles. I have always been active in schools, churches. Everywhere I am, I take a leading role to try to help a lot of young people, but elderly, veterans, disabled. My background is varied throughout all of those different scenarios, and I'm very proud of Baltimore County and the work I've done, I'm proud of as well.
So, Kim, why did you decide to run in 2026?
Well, I've wanted to run for office since I was 14 years old. But, you know, life has a way of getting in the way. And I got married, had kids, raised my family. And then, remember COVID when we're all locked in our houses? My husband said, do you really want to still run for office? And I said, I haven't thought about that in years. And he said, I think you should. Now would be a very good time for you to get back into the swing of things. At the time, he knew that he didn't have much time left. He had severe health issues. So he said, I won't be here long, but I will help you in any way possible. He said, let's do this. And I said, okay. And from that, I registered to, you know, be a candidate. At first, I was thinking about, you know, county council, but at the time they were doing redistricting. And my husband said, no, don't worry about that. He said, you've been waiting long enough. Why don't you go for county executive? If anyone can do it, you can. So he said, let's bypass all of the redistricting and all of that. If you're going to chase a dream, let's go big or go home. And I said, okay. So that's why I ran for Baltimore County Executive in 2022. It is a dream of mine, like I said, since I was 14 years old. And it seemed to be unattainable for a very long time. I went through health issues myself. I had breast cancer. So after chemo and radiation and, you know, back to getting my family back in a good place, you know, healthy, happy. You know, my kids grew up, they went to, you know, college, and I found myself, well, what's the next chapter of my life? And politics, getting back to that, seemed to be a good choice for me.
All right. And I forgot to mention, Kim and I are acquaintances. I wouldn't exactly call you my friend. I don't call you every day or every week. But we have I have been to Kim's house a couple times, I believe. And ever since the 2022 election, after that was over, we've stayed in touch.
Absolutely. You know,
Kim's just a nice lady. I mean, it's hard to find good people. So when you meet somebody like this, even if it's through politics, even if they're not in the same party as you, you don't want to lose contact with those people.
The 2022 elections, there was six of us running for county executive. All six of us, or at least I still have contact with all six, you know, four of them a lot, two, you know, just, you know, periphery contact. But I think we all ended it as pretty much friends. And that's something you don't see very often.
Yeah, I think we both see, you know, like you said, you're proud of Baltimore County, and so am I. You know, I mean, this is where I've grown up all my life, and we just see things are not being handled right. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't run for office, right?
A lot of things could be better, And I think that that's what my main goal is, to make Baltimore County a place where everyone wants to live, raise their family, work, own a business, whatever you want to do. Baltimore County is the place to do it. And I see so much potential in all of Baltimore County, from the west side to the east side. It's a great place. We have everything anyone could ever need right here in Baltimore County. We just have to tap into that potential and make it what we know that it could be.
I was a guest at an event that Kim was at, that she spoke at, and I believe it was you, Kim, that said, it's possible we're going to lose $500 million of federal funding. Can you go into that?
President Trump has stated that cities and counties that allow for cooperation with, or say that they will not cooperate with ICE, may lose federal funding. For Baltimore County, that could be up to $500 million. Look at it this way. When a criminal is arrested in Baltimore County and taken to the detention center, at that point, all the information gets put into the computer. When the computer says that this person has an ICE detainer, Baltimore County signed a MOU, or a Memorandum of Understanding, that it would pick up the phone, call ICE, and say, look, we have this person and he has an ICE detainer. That is all we have to do in order to maintain our funding. That way they can decide whether they're going to come get them and take them. And then, let's face it, if they are in our detention center, we are housing them, clothing them, feeding them. You know, that puts a lot of burden on Baltimore County. If the federal government comes and gets them, we are no longer responsible for that. That saves us money. Also, the $500 million. If we lose funding of $500 million, what program do we cut? Because we can't afford to lose that and maintain everything at the level that we are now. What are you willing to lose because we won't pick up the phone and make a phone call? So that's something that everyone needs to ask themselves. If we're not going to cooperate by at least picking up the phone and calling and saying, we have a criminal in custody, what do you want us to do with him? Are you coming to pick him up? That's it. That's the extent of what we have to do. I think we can do that in order to, one, get a criminal off the streets, because let's face it, if he has an ICE detainer and he has just been booked into, you know, our center, then let's face it, they're criminals.
Right.
Most of these people have, you know, multiple warrants out there, multiple, you know, and we're talking about violent crime. We're not talking about, you know, misdemeanors. We're talking about violent crime, crime against children, you know, rape, murder. I don't want them on the streets of Baltimore County if they're going to hurt the people of Baltimore County.
Yep, because statistically speaking, people tend to reoffend.
Correct.
You know, if they have a history of it, you know, it may not be murder again, but it might be something else. And then we have another victim. So
we can't put people in Baltimore County in danger because we didn't pick up the phone.
Yep. I mean, I honestly don't know what the argument is on the side that disagrees with me. I don't think it's a logical one. So I think they're trying to score political points. Maybe there is some money exchanging hands. I don't have evidence of that. I wish I did. But I can only speculate why you would be pro-criminal. Why would you want more problems in an area that already has issues? Which that's actually my next question, which is, right now, and in the past few years, we've seen a spike in juvenile carjackings and theft, which, of course, has driven up our auto insurance. As county executive, you appoint the police chief. Will you mandate a zero tolerance strategy for repeat juvenile offenders, or do you support the current diversion first approach?
No, I want juvenile crime to come to, I wish I could say it could come to a standstill, but we all know that that's not realistic. That's not going to happen. But I have zero tolerance for that. This, you know, slap them on the wrist and say, don't do it again. That's not going to be what Baltimore County does. Crime has consequences in Baltimore County, even if you're a juvenile.
And do you have any specifics that you would tell a police chief to do differently on day one regarding anything else?
All I can say is safety is the number one priority for Baltimore County, for me. A community that is safe is a community that's happy. We have too much to lose for the people of Baltimore County to worry every time they go to the grocery store, every time they go to church, every time they go shopping. Now, this is not the life that we want in Baltimore County. And I would tell the police chief, look, we're not going to just, you know, have a revolving door of criminals. We want crime, people to know that crime in Baltimore County has severe consequences, and we will prosecute to the fullest extent of the law.
Okay. And I'll add to that, that Towson, your area, used to be one of my number one favorite hangout spots during college. And, you know, there was a few people who maybe they got pulled over for DUI or something like that. But rarely did I ever witness, I don't think I ever witnessed any violence, but, you know, I went there recently about 3 months ago, just drove by on a Thursday night through York Road. I couldn't believe the amount of police cars that were just there. I don't know if they were there as a deterrent, but it's not the same Towson that I went to.
We have had our share of problems. I would like to say that we have them all resolved, though we are working in the right direction. Thirsty Thursdays are no longer a thing in Towson, which contributed to a large amount of crime in that area. So we've taken care of that. Now we just have to take care of, we've had a large rash of actually not thefts of vehicles, but actually vehicle parts. Communities have been reporting that they wake up and the tires are off of their cars or, you know, some other part that's easily sold.
That's happening in Towson?
That is happening in Towson. I was at a meeting last Wednesday and the police were there to give an update. And that seems to be what the, you know, the most dominant thing at this point in Towson is.
Okay.
You know, we have so much going on in Towson. We want crime down because we want to attract more business in Towson. We want people to, you know, frequent those businesses without worrying that, you know, they're going to get robbed or something, you know, attacked. Or we want Towson safe. And as county executive, that's going to be my number one priority.
Okay, switching topics. The Inspector General's office has been a hot topic as of late. As you know, Kelly Madigan resigned. And I think that is currently vacant, or at least there's, you know, there's not a lot going there. There's nobody really at the helm right now, an official person at the Inspector General's office. So what do you think about giving the Inspector General's office a percentage of the a fixed percentage of the budget, so that it's properly funded like Baltimore City's Inspector General's offices?
I am fully supportive of the Inspector General's office. I think Kelly Madigan did a fantastic job. Her office was increased a little, but I would like to see that widely increased. There is so much that they help with to help make sure that Baltimore County is running efficiently, you know, to weed out the fraud, the waste, and the abuse. We have to keep that going. I would like to see that expanded into the school system as well. We need to know where our tax dollars are going and how they are spent. I want to make sure that we have a handle on where everything is, and I'm going to look at every line in the budget. This is one of the things I do best. I look at budgets. I love working with a spreadsheet. I want to know where the money is. I want to know how it's used, and is it being used efficiently? With me, you can always think, she's going to do the best she can to make sure we get everything for our money's worth, for everything.
So the next subject, and this is something that I had heard about for years, but I never really dug into it until recently. But my question is, developers are the biggest donors in county politics. And if you go back through the history of all the different county council sessions, they always tend to get these zoning variances. So my question as a Dundalk resident, and there's a lot of people like me out there who we just don't trust politicians. So how do you, and or what do you want to say to somebody like myself or to other cynical voters, other skeptical voters, that your administration won't just be another rubber stamp for people that write the biggest campaign checks?
Look, we can't regulate what developer or who developers donate to, but we can vote into office people that we feel have the most impact on our community, who have the same values that we do. So before you vote for a candidate, find out, is that candidate taking developer money? Look, like I said, we can't regulate who gives to who. That's freedom. But we can vote, you know, from what we see. For me, it's developer impact fees that the county has not collected. Developer fees in 2023, 2024 were zero. That is more concerning to me. How come they're not paying their fair share? When a developer, you know, builds something in Baltimore County, the fees right now, more often than not, are waived. They are the APFO, Adequate Public Facilities Ordinances, has a formulary that will tell us that if you build apartments with so many X amount of units, there should be historically X amount of children that will probably move into that development. Therefore, the school system needs to know how many children will be enrolled in Baltimore County schools. The developers are supposed to pay a fee. Right now, they're putting zero. This cannot continue to happen. We have to be open. We have to be honest. We cannot overburden our schools that, and when September rolls around, all of a sudden they have 100 new students that they're not prepared for. So let's do what we can with, you know, and make us all work together with developers to try to make this county better and try to ease the burden on our school system.
Right. I'm not a NIMBY type person, which stands for not in my backyard. But I do understand that the sewage issues being over capacity, like where I live, is a big problem. And the overcrowding at schools, I hear from my younger relatives, is a problem.
It's all a problem. Right now, when they put in a new development, according to the governor's office, they do not have to take into consideration infrastructure, which includes your roads, your schools, your water, your sewage, that sort of thing. this can't be because we're overburdened as it is. Our schools are overcrowded. Our roads are in deplorable condition. Let's face it, we have a lot of work to do here in Baltimore County, and it will start day one. We lost the Francis Scott Key Bridge, so cars are now driving through eastern Baltimore County on a daily basis, 45 minutes sometimes, you know, out of their way on roads that are, you know, hurting their vehicles because they're running into potholes because the traffic has gotten so bad. It puts, an 45 minutes to an hour more time onto their day. That's time they could be spending with their families. I mean, you're talking each way. So that's almost 2 hours, an hour and a half. We have to do something. And when you build an apartment complex, let's face it, you're going to have people doing laundry, people washing dishes, taking showers, people going to the bathroom, which, you know, it's a part of life. This is what it is. So we have to make sure that our water and sewer work efficiently. The Back River Wastewater Treatment Plant is going through some renovations right now. And let me tell you, they've been working hard, but it hasn't been enough. We need to make sure that it runs as efficiently as possible. And let's face it, I actually feel sorry for the people in that area with the midges this past summer, and also the smell. Apparently, they can't find where the smell is coming from. This is a quality of life issue. No one wants to go outside because of the smell. You come around on 695, you smell it. People are working hard to find out what that is. That is one thing that we will find, and we will make it better.
Well, I always make the joke to people who haven't been to Dundalk yet is, as soon as you smell that smell, take the next exit and you're in Dundalk.
And then you're there. I know, but we have to find out, is it a broken pipe? Is it,
I'm making a joke about it, but the reality is that the overdevelopment has led to a lot of problems that if any of these people that are in office right now would play a game of SimCity, they would lose the game. You can't have this, oh, we can't take this and that into account. You have to. That's asinine. When you were just telling me that they don't take this different stuff into account, that is an asinine way of governing. And, I just wish more voters would know about it.
Absolutely. I mean, all of this equals quality of life.
Yes.
We want a good life for everyone in Baltimore County. Look, I am not opposed to development. I am opposed to irresponsible development when these things are not taking into consideration.
Right.
What harm is it going to have on our communities?
Right. What's the old saying, Kim? You can't put the cart before the horse. And there's a lot of that going on.
Absolutely. We also have to make sure that when, a new development comes in, are there enough grocery stores? Are there, are things easy to be, to get to?
Good point.
You know, all of a sudden, are you going to have a new school? Well, it probably takes at least 10 years to get a new school.
Yeah.
At least. We have to take these things into consideration. What is it going to do for the community? Is it going to help the community, or is it going to hurt the community? And hopefully we can make these decisions and everything will help, and we can all learn to just, live together. Wouldn't it be really nice if Baltimore County was a place that everybody's like, I really want to go to Baltimore County because it is so awesome. They've done new things. Look at Owings Mills. They have where you have shopping centers and apartments, and it's easy access. I mean, they did great with that multi-use development project in Owings Mills.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. but they took into consideration all the things in that community and how it was all going to work. With proper planning, this can be done, and it can be done right.
Yep. It's all about who's making the decisions, and you know, you said it perfectly. It can be done right. It should be done right. And with the right people in place, it will.
Correct. And that is a game changer. Having the right people that actually care about Baltimore County. Look, I'm a person that thinks that the people you vote for, that you vote in office, there's a reason why it says you have to live in your community. There's a purpose behind that. Because when you are in your community, you know things like, where's the best, you know, pizza shop? Where's the best dry cleaner? Where is this? Where is that? You know the people in your community. And when you are active in your community and you know the people, you don't want to see anything happen to them. It's a personal affront when, you know, your community is suffering and you really want to help. You know, I actually think that the people who work for county government should live in Baltimore County. They should know these same things, because I think you should have, I'm not a sports person, but I think, isn't there an expression, skin in the game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should actually be a part of this community.
I don't see a problem with that one. In fact, I thought it was a joke when I found out the person they were trying to replace Kelly Madigan with lived like 2 hours away from Baltimore County.
Yes.
You literally could not script it better for a Saturday Night Live skit than something like that. And I mean, just the thought process or the lack thereof going on. And you know, these are our elected officials. These are, and I am not going to call them stupid. It could be nefarious. I don't know. But I just, you know, when you're doing that kind of thing, I have to question the thought process, whatever it is. You know, wasn't there anybody that applied for that job? I don't believe it was an open application process, because that's something I actually would have been interested in. you know what I mean? But yeah, it's interesting. So I'm going to move on. I'm going to go back to Dundalk again, because like I said, this is my area. I do care. Trade Point Atlantic has been in the news lately because they've received tax breaks. And you know, I guess my question as a small business person is, if one doesn't already exist, would you be interested in having some staff member assigned to deal with the maintenance and expansion of small businesses so we don't lose the mom and pop shops?
I love mom and pop shops. But, you know, yes, we should have a liaison between small business and Baltimore County that we can help them. Right now, we do have Chamber of Commerce, which helps so much for small businesses. But, yeah, I think you're asking something about Trade Point Atlantic, whether we should have a liaison with them.
No.
They're bringing 8,000 new jobs into Baltimore County.
And that's great. But no, my question actually was more about the difference between how big businesses seem to get advantages that the smaller ones don't get. And actually, I know some small business owners, and it took them, in some cases, over a year to get like a simple permit, you know.
We have to redo our permit process. It is arduous at best. We need to have liaisons that will help people walk through the permit process. Right now, you go in for a permit and it's like, okay, now what do I do? And they expect you to already know. But no, people, everyday people, don't know how hard it is. You cannot walk in on a Friday and come out with a permit on Monday. It takes time. You have to fill out the proper paperwork, you know, and it's a waiting game. So, yes, we need to streamline that process. Let's help our small businesses get through this process. You know, it's not just, you know, it's for everyday people as well. Say they need a permit to put up a fence or, you know, put an addition on their house. We need to make this where people can do what they need to do and not feel like that the government is against them. Because let's face it, we work for you, the taxpayer. Or at least I hope to work for you, the taxpayer. Right now, I think we've forgotten that, you know, the people of Baltimore County actually pays our salaries. And this is something we are beholden to you. You know, you look at us, you know, we're there to lead and to make sure that everything runs efficiently and smoothly. But we're not there to get in your way. We are actually here to help.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way people should look at their county government.
I hope this election cycle, a lot more people, when they receive those, you know, preliminary ballots in the mail, that they do their research. I mean, this is why a big reason I started the Baltimore Informer is so that when they Google Kimberly Stansberry, they can hear your voice. They can hear what you care about the most and then, you know, make an informed choice. I'm trying to interview every candidate. I'm not trying to play favorites. But I just want to give every candidate the opportunity and, you know, may the best one win. And hopefully they are being honest with people while they're campaigning.
Absolutely. I love this county. I want the best for everyone here. I want us to have, you know, solid, you know, families, you know, places for everyone to feel like they are safe in this county. I want our schools to be best so our kids get a good education. Let's face it, when our kids graduate, they should be able to read. And I'm afraid that right now we're letting them down. Look, not all kids are ready to go to college, but we should have, you know, trades in the county where they can make a good living with electrical, plumbing, HVAC, cosmetology, all these different things. Maybe pair it with, you know, Essex Community College or, you know, other community colleges. Let's make it where, you know, they can get their CDL license if that's what they want to do. But let's make it where they can actually leave school and have a path forward for their future. You know, if they can make a good wage, if they can, you know, do that, then maybe they'll think, wow, you know, Baltimore County is a great place to live. This is the place I want to raise my family. And it's a cycle that goes on, and they learn to love this county as much as I love this county. And that's my hope for all of Baltimore County.
One of the things that I heard when I was a substitute teacher was we just feel like we're having our time wasted. And I'm not going to say every student said that, but, you know, this is something I think needs to be addressed. And so that students, and they don't have to be A students. They don't even have to be B students.
No.
You know, as long as there's plenty of work out there, it's just that right now you have a certification process that a lot of times holds people back. A friend of mine wanted to get involved in HVAC. He didn't know the right connections to find the companies that would have paid for his training. You know, so if there can be some kind of like conduit system where, you know, because
apprenticeships with different companies.
Yeah, where
kids are interested in something. Say someone wants to be an accountant. Well, how about if they volunteer or have an apprenticeship with a company, an accounting company, just to see? They might be there, you know, a few months and say, this isn't for me.
Right.
And that's okay. You know, they may want to try something else, but at least let them have exposure to what they think they want. Because let's face it, when you're 17, 16, 17, 18 years old, you don't know what you want to do for the rest of your life. Some do, but a lot don't.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to experience different things. Wouldn't it be great if somebody who wanted to be a chef could, you know, we could make it where, you know, maybe there'll be a sous chef for, you know, a restaurant in Baltimore County. You know, it doesn't have to be a permanent position, but something that they could just try it out.
Right.
Now, just they could help out in so many different ways. And if we partner with businesses in this way, one, it gives them, oh, I can see if, you know, any of the students at a certain school, how about if I had one or two that would help my business, especially young businesses that are just getting off the ground. This would be a great way to work things out.
Yeah, there's so many things that, now I know that, you know, watching, and I'm sure you have watched the different Baltimore County Public Schools meetings, right? You watch their meetings sometimes.
I do.
And, you know, there's a lot of good ideas. I do. One of the things that bothers me is that the state has so much power over curriculum. And in fact, I think they even took more of that power away. I don't want to say recently, but within the past few years. And what I've heard from teachers so many times, Kim, and one of my relatives is a teacher. Another one of my relatives is a student aide. What they tell me is, let us teach. Let us teach. We are professionals. Treat us like professionals.
Absolutely.
So I don't know what can be done at the local level, but I'm, you know, it's worth trying, and it's worth trying to put some pressure at the state level to let them teach.
I hear you, and I hear the same complaints.
You know, they talk about diversity, and they're making robots. You know what I'm saying? Like, not everybody wants to go to college. Not everybody needs to go to college. And that shouldn't be like the main, you know, that was literally 1970s and 1980s education goals. You know, this is a completely different world with AI, you know, and how that's going to affect people going, moving forward. And this is something that I really, really hope they are thinking about. You know,
I hope so too. We spend half of our budget, a little over half of the county budget, on the school system. My hope is, and let's face it, the actual county has government doesn't have a whole lot to do with curriculum or things of that nature. That is handled by the school board. And, you know, the superintendent of public schools is the one and only employee of the Baltimore of the school board. So that is who he answers to, he or she. So let's get it where, you know, we're putting in all of this money, but we need to get the idea that they need to be, you know, in tune with what the actual people of the county want. Look, we all want our children to be able to read and to write and to be able to do math. These are solid principles that we need, and we need to let them know. Our kids not reading on grade level, our kids not doing math on grade level, this is unacceptable to us. And don't get me wrong, it's not the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers work so hard in our county. I love teachers. I volunteered in the classroom when my kids were going to school. Teachers work so very hard, but they have so much to do. You know, this is something that's going to take a lot of work. And it's going to take a lot of forethought and a lot of revamping of systems that's been in place for a long time now. But it needs an overhaul.
It can be done. like you said, or like we were saying earlier, the overcrowding schools causes issues. And, you know, there's only so many classrooms. There's only so many trailers you can put outside the schools. And, you know, when, because like I said, I hear it every once in a while from my relative. You know, it's very difficult teaching 30 kids or 35. I think one time my relative had 35 students. I didn't know that was even legal, and maybe I'm exaggerating on that, but my goodness, you can't have quality learning with that kind of classroom size. You just can't.
I agree with you to a point, but when I was going to school, 40 was a normal number of kids in the classroom.
Okay, well then, you know what? I'm just going to say it. I'm going to blame the parents. I'm going to blame the parents on the, because you have to, Kim, you've had, how many children do you have?
I have two.
Okay. Now, what did you do as a parent to help them with their education? You didn't just assume the teacher was doing all the work, right?
No, I did not. I volunteered in the classrooms. I was member of the PTA. When my kids came home from school, they got their snack. Then they did their homework. Then they went out to play. You know, homework had to come first. I would make sure they had it all, everything that they needed. You know, they had their backpacks. They had, you know, their folders that had their assignments in it. And we're going back a ways now.
The marble notebooks.
Yes.
Do they still have them?
They do. But let's face it. Parents, usually both parents work now. There's not a whole lot of time between the time the kids are picked up from school or get home from school, get mm-hmm. dinner on the table, you know, get baths, get, you know, different things to do the family thing. And it's hard because people are working sometimes two jobs.
Yes.
And it's not as easy as when, you know, there was a stay-at-home parent. You know, that was a luxury back in, you know, the 60s and the 70s, but that's not the culture we have now. You know, parents work hard, and kids, you know, they go to school, they have different things to deal with way beyond what we had to deal with going to school.
Yeah, those digital devices, man, let me tell you, because they're in back when I was a kid, when I started using computers, it was separate from your physical being.
Right.
Now it's in your pocket, so it's an extension of your arm. You know?
I understand. But, you know, we have to work through these things. I mean, kids have sports. They have, you know, all kinds of different, you know, things that they do. And that's up to each and every family. You know, different priorities are, you know, for each and every family to decide what they are. Mm-hmm. But the number one thing you can do to help your children, especially when they're small, is read to your children.
Yes.
You know, that is so important. I hear it over and over and over again. You know, give them a foundation before they ever go to school. My kids couldn't wait for their story time at night. You know, that helped them settle down, you know, help them get the sleep that they need. You know, it's just so important.
Mm-hmm. And what I will say as a non-parent is what will get your kids interested in reading is whatever topic they're interested in. You know, so like for me growing up, it was video games, and my parents got me subscriptions to GamePro, Electronic Gaming Monthly. My sister had the Babysitter Club books. You remember those?
I remember those. My daughter had them as well.
And then I had the Goosebumps books. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I had every single one of the Goosebumps books. But no, this is how you find the love of reading. And I, if there's any librarians out there listening to this, I have love for you all. You all, you know, put knowledge into our brains. And yes, most of the reading I do nowadays and what most people do is electronically on a backlit screen. But that love of reading would have never started if my parents would have said no. If they would have said, no, we're not going to get you the Game Pro. You're going to read the old books that we have and that I had no interest in, that had no beautiful covers, no pictures. You know, like, kids need that stimulation.
They do. I agree. Reading is so important. And I'm going to do everything I can to try to get that Middle River Library, because I believe so much in the library system.
Yes.
I loved going to the library as a child. You know, it was like going to an amusement park almost. You know, books, you know, they will take you on adventures that you never knew you could go on. It was so amazing.
Our libraries now, I mean, people do use them, but I think that they are underutilized for what they are. And they are great with, oh my goodness, you can get magazine subscriptions. Like, I would have DVDs, CDs, like, that are audiobooks.
You can get audiobooks, you can get electronic books, you can get, you know, so many things,
mm-hmm.
you know, but also they're a place that, you know, they have their meeting rooms and things like that, where so many people can meet. And, you know, our elderly sometimes go to, because they want to read the old newspapers. They want, you know, they want that connection with a book. And, you know, these are things that they're community centers.
Yes.
You know, they have reading programs for children. They have, you know, like Saturday morning story time. And this is what we need as a community. You know, let's not, you know, underscore how important it is.
Absolutely, because it's the foundation of everything else. You know, if you want to be a HVAC or electrician or you know, all these AI jobs that are going to be coming out, if you can't read, you can't do those jobs. So my goodness, like, you know, I don't know how they assess the reading levels, Kim. I honestly don't. I know that they do testing, and they obviously the teachers. And this is, by the way, another problem that I really think needs to be addressed is the passing students through the grades just to keep the statistic up. Like, no, like if a child is not at the level that they should be, they should be held back. If Kim, if you would like to elaborate on that, please go ahead.
Look, I know they have a formula, but I agree with you. I have no problem with that. You know, kids need to get the help that they need. If they are struggling, then, you know, maybe, you know, if they're not ready to jump from the kindergarten to first grade or whatever it is, we have to make sure that we have plans in place to help every child at the level that they are at. You know, we have to make sure that the resources are there.
Yeah, I mean, that really, what is it, ages 5 through 8 or 9 are like the most important learning ages. And if that gets screwed up, I was reading about this a few years ago. If that level is overlooked and a child has just passed through the system, it's possible they never recover.
I will let the experts deal with that.
Yeah.
Because I have a personal opinion and I agree with you, but I am sure there are a lot of people out there that know a lot more than I do about education. And mm-hmm. you know what? Come see me. We'll talk about it. Let's put things in place. You know, I'm willing to listen to whatever anyone has to say.
Absolutely.
You know, listening is at the foundation of everything. I'm open to new ideas. I'm open to, what have you got? Come and tell me. Let's see if we can't work it out.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's the thing that always, that I didn't know as a substitute teacher, how to get through how to get a child interested in something if they are absolutely refusing to do it.
Look,
you know, like I said,
the best people that know what our kids need are parents. You know, parents are, they're your children.
Mm-hmm.
You know them better than anyone else. You know what they need. You know, cooperation between teachers and parents and children. This is what we need. We need strong foundations, and it takes all of us to work together to get these children to where they need to be.
Yep. And like you said, the PTA is an organization that's been around, it's at least since I was in school, I'm sure well before then. And if you're not, you don't have to go to the meetings per se, but I mean, everything, look, we live in a great time now where you don't necessarily have to even be physically present to attend or even get a summary of what happened. So, you know, even if you have a very busy life, find out what's going on at your local school that you are sending your child to for 7.5 hours a day, and that your taxes are going to pay for. Because unfortunately, you know, one person can't overlook every single little detail. That is definitely on the parents, and the teachers appreciate it too. I know that they had me do that parent teacher student night. I forget what the official name of that is.
Mm-hmm.
But they had me do that when I was substituting, and I'm like, okay, throw me into the fires. But I appreciated all the parents that came there, and they all told me, hey, like just be honest with me. If my student's a troublemaker, that's another thing we didn't talk about was classroom discipline, but this wasn't supposed to be all about education. So I'm going to go.
This is about making our county strong.
But it's so important, because eventually these children, once they become adults, you know, I'm not saying they have to be forced to stay in Baltimore County, but man, wouldn't it be great for them to say, yes, Baltimore County is a place I want to raise my kids. I don't want to just, I don't want to settle for raising my kids here just because I am here, you know?
You're so correct. You know, we can make Baltimore County a great place. We are Baltimore County strong, and we're going to continue to be strong.
So final question for you, Kim. I forget who it was. It might have been Harry Truman, but I might be wrong on my history. The first 100 days, what will you do if elected in the first 9 months as county executive? What are your priorities?
Safety is my number one priority. Getting a handle on infrastructure, whether it is roads, bridges, hospital, whatever it is, I have to know. But I have to know the budget. You know, I have to know if we are in a good place or if we're in a deficit. I need to know the budget. So that my first 100 days, look, I have to find out as much as I can about every aspect of Baltimore County government. I mean, I'm trying now to go to every meeting I can. I go to the county council sessions, but it won't tell me everything because, let's face it, I am not an insider. I am looking in from the outside. I have to dig and find out every single thing. And then for the first 100 days, I want to know, you know, everything I can, what is good, what is bad, and we have to start fixing things.
Yes, and I'll back Kim up by saying that as a fellow outsider, I tried to get information from the county, and a lot of times they would slow walk the process or outright deny me. Until you're actually elected, you're not privy to that information.
Correct.
So I respect that answer 100%. So Kim, please tell the Baltimore County. Let me ask you one more thing. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to talk about on the podcast?
No, I'm good. I think we covered a large amount of issues. And believe me, if you go to my website, you'll find out what things are, you know, important to me. I would like to talk about a little more about the environment. But you will see that I am so, you know, wanting to make our waterways better. I hate the idea that you go to the DNR reports and you pull up fishing consumption and you find that there are things in our bay and in our tributaries that you cannot eat. We need our waterways clean, and I am all about cleanup. Let's, you know, let's make our water. Water is life. If you don't have clean water, you know, you're doing a lot of damage, not only to the environment, but to people. So that's one thing I would have liked to talk more about, but I know that we're almost out of time.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for joining me tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And best of luck with your campaign. Can you tell the audience what your website is?
Yes, it's www.electkimstansberry.org. You can go to my website, you can read a few articles, you know, you can donate, you can ask me questions, you know, comments, whatever you want. You can volunteer. I'm always ready for, you know, people to help with the campaign. Or you can reach me at electkimstansberry2022@gmail.com. So those are ways you can all, you know, reach me.
Okay. And do you have any upcoming events, like a meet and greet, or I guess just check the website?
Just check the website. I know that there will be one coming out soon, but I don't have a confirmed date yet. So just keep checking. And, you know, Baltimore County, you are my people. You know, I love everything about Baltimore County, and I'm here to serve you. And that's what your, you know, next county executive should be. They should be there to serve the people of Baltimore County.